It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Shots rang out at the end of the Gilroy Garlic Festival, sending people scrambling for safety. Witnesses say a man appeared to the right of a concert stage, holding a semi-automatic rifle. Singer of the band, Tin Man, heard someone shout, "Why are you doing this?" And the gunman reply, "Because I'm really angry."
It was like a semi-automatic going off really close, too. You know, people screaming and hiding and ducking.
They were getting closer. So I just started running. I left everything and I ran.
I felt one of the bullets go over my head, and then we actually seen a couple of the bullets fly by. And that's when we just helped everybody get out of the way, get out of the scene.
I thought I was going to die.
This 7-year-old boy hid under a table.
Since they were like 40 feet away from us.
Police say the gunman avoided security and metal detectors by entering through the creek north of the park and using a tool to cut through the fenced-in area.
Officers were in that area and engaged the suspect in less than a minute.
Video taken after the shooting appears to show a man handcuffed on the ground, surrounded by officers. Nearby, the wounded are being treated by emergency responders. The panicked crowd evacuated immediately. Some people were brought to local schools. Others took shelter in semi-trailer trucks, waiting to be reunited with their families.
It is such a sad, just horribly upsetting circumstance to have seen this event end this way. This day is just one of the most tragic and sad things that I've ever had to see.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. I know that you've heard about that shooting already. You probably heard it at the top of the hour with our AFR Talk News crack team, always on the latest breaking headlines. This happened yesterday. That's the best, actually, report I've heard about it. I heard details on that I had not heard before. Gilroy Garlic Festival in Northern California. Here's the thing. We don't know anything yet. Really, we don't. I mean, we know that 4 people are dead and 15 were injured. Just my observations, and they are just really slim observations. I saw two or three video taken of people at the scene describing it. And the thing that struck me is instead of being like the people on the videos, taping the videos, seemed, why would a guy do this at the garlic festival? Why? Wow, man, there's shots firing. It was like, I just thought, that people, at least those people, seem dulled, their senses dulled, not a sense of urgency. That's just one observation for me. The second thing, you know, we don't know who the shooter is. I guess I would predict this, you know, if the shooter was a member of Antifa and that's why he was angry, then it'll go dark. But if he's a white supremacist or a conservative, it'll be all over the headlines. And so I don't know. I mean, lots of people are angry right now, and so we don't have a clue, really. He's dead, and he can't speak for himself, but I'm sure they'll be filling in the blanks. But if they're going to be, you know, the FBI is still telling us that white supremacists pose the greatest danger, or you know, nationalists, white supremacists to this country. I'm sorry, I just don't believe that. That's what Comey tried to brainwash us with, get into the national fabric of understanding. That's where they put their resources. And I will never forget. I will never forget under Comey's leadership, the day that gunman shot down the Republicans on the ball field practicing in Alexandria, Virginia, just very close to where we were living. And they did a the FBI did a press conference and were so nonchalant, went out of their way to talk about the shooter. It just probably domestic problems, you know, just, you know, who really knows, kind of upset about things at home, and never, ever made the link to him being a man who targeted Republicans and hated conservatives. Never did that. And so we can't trust our FBI right now. I don't think, even under Christopher Wray's leadership. And by the way, one of the points I can make specifically about him, I think I've told you that many of us are concerned about him. He, in testimony, just about 2 weeks after the Mueller report was issued in the spring, was testifying before Capitol Hill and was asked if he had read the Mueller report. And guess what? He had not. The director of the FBI had not bothered to read the Mueller report. Now, whether he's read it since then, I don't know. But that's whose hands our lives are depending right now. And I just hope there'll be a shakeup on that. And I guess I could jump to this next story. Speaking of changes in personnel, the president made a big change over the weekend. He replaced Dan Coats, who's a former congressman from Indiana. And I think many of you probably thought that Dan Coats was a really good guy. And I have to say, I think he used to be. But I have known that in more current years, he developed into a very soft rhino. And probably, I'm just guessing here, a never-Trumper. Probably not a fan. He's opposed President Trump on many, many issues since he was nominated to be the Director of National Intelligence. Remember that? That is the position that Lieutenant General Flynn used to hold. When he was fired by Barack Obama and so hated by the deep state intelligence agencies, Dan Coats then has taken that position and not so hated, you know, and countering President Trump on many things. And so something dramatic happened over the weekend. And I can't say I'm sorry about this. I won't say I'm sorry about it. Remember John Ratcliffe, who testified in the hearings on with Mueller on Thursday? Thursday or Wednesday, John Ratcliffe was the one who asked Director Mueller about the whole notion of what is the word? Finding the president not guilty, basically. Exonerating him. That was the word. The whole exchange about exoneration and how that's not in our judicial system. It was a great exchange. John was very strong on that. Well, the president has now chosen him to replace Dan Coats, and Dan Coats' last day will be August the 15th, and I'm happy about that. Now, the press is saying, in fact, Fox News in print, which, again, is becoming less and less trusted, that's all I can tell you. The article by Rebecca Grant says, what's behind Trump's selection of John Ratcliffe as Director of National Intelligence? And she gives us the answer that he is a total shill for Donald Trump. Basically, that's what she says in this Fox News article. It isn't that he's capable. It's that he picked him because he, you know, he's a blind loyalist to President Trump. And so he is a loyalist, and he defended on the facts the rule of law, which is that prosecutors just do not, never have, in our code of justice, tried to exonerate. It is not their job ever, ever, ever. If you've ever gone to trial for something, you are either guilty or not guilty. They don't say, well, you know, he's not innocent. I mean, we found enough stuff here that really, you know, he can go, but he's not exonerated. It doesn't happen that way, ever. And so remember John Ratcliffe famously said, the president definitely is not above the law, but he's not under it either. And so that's what he said. So he's the choice. I think I'm glad. That's all I could say. I'm really glad about that. All right. One other bit of good news that I want to share with you. Over the weekend, the U.S. Supreme Court, in a 5-4 decision, now the pundits say the 5 conservatives and the 4 liberals. I don't see it that way. I do not see it that way, but that is the way it broke down. John Roberts actually joined the other Trump appointees and other Alito and Justice Thomas to agree that the president had every right to use funds to advance construction of a wall along the country's southern border. You may remember in that budget fight, that partial government shutdown that lasted about 35 days, the president finally ended the shutdown and got paltry $1.4 billion in border wall funding. And what he did as a counter was he found money other places. He declared a national emergency so that he could take cash from other government accounts. And so the left, of course, went to work to try to stop that. As I recall, they argued about, they gave environmental arguments like, I wish I could find that part. Like they want to fish in that area. They want to, you know, go bird watching in that area that they want to build a fence. And so they had tried to stop that. And the Solicitor General argued that that was not, that did not, their concerns or loss of the ability to hunt or fish or whatever it was they wanted to do in that area did not supersede the concern of citizens who are being threatened by illegal border crossings, criminal activities, and drug smuggling. And so the Supreme Court voted in President Trump's favor, and President Trump was very happy about that, I have to say. All right. Another thing that happened over the weekend that's not entirely good, and I'm just wondering if I should say this. I think I'm going to start it, and I will finish it on the other side. But here's the thing, and we're in the process right now. Now, Congress is not in session, but before they're out, they're on their recess. But before the House left, they passed, let me just say, a really bad budget deal. Let me read to you, give you an idea of why this is so bad. Now, the Senate has not voted on it yet. The president has not signed it. It's the House that's passed it so far, just so you'll understand. So here's the deal. The debt ceiling is going to be suspended until July 31st of 2021. So no caps on spending anymore. And what happened was Steve Mnuchin negotiated with Nancy Pelosi, and what they came up with was tons more spending. Zero reforms on spending cuts, probably $2 trillion more dollars in additional debt between now and 2021. And that's if Congress holds the line on anything else, any other spending. They cancel the budget caps. The total cost of erasing the spending cuts plus adding new spending will be $321 billion over 2 years. And so Daniel Horowitz writes, what Republicans accomplished with one branch of government was erased when their power grew. After winning back control of the Senate, noted fiscal conservative, in quote unquote, that's tongue in cheek, Paul Ryan forged a deal to bust the caps by a total of $80 billion in 2016 and 2017. When Republicans won the White House, they agreed to another budget busting bill of $296 billion. 2018 and 2019. Now they were at another $320 billion. In other words, by simply coasting with a status quo baseline, Republicans could have pocketed nearly $700 billion in less spending. Yet they chose to use their power to spend everything Democrats want. And you wonder how this happened? Well, Steve Mnuchin was trying to negotiate with Nancy Pelosi. The Democrats are intransigent on increasing spending. They insist. And the big trade-off has been under Paul Ryan, they started this business of offsetting spending or increases in spending. So if the Republicans got an increase in military spending, which was so badly needed, it was the military had been starved under Barack Obama as it was under Bill Clinton. And if they were going to get an increase in military spending, then the Democrats demanded an equal increase on funding social giveaway programs and their pet projects. And so instead of fighting that, the Republicans caved with Paul Ryan time and time again, even when they had both houses of Congress. Mitch McConnell actually told the president, if I can find this quote, he basically told the president that no politician has ever lost an election because he spent more money. Well, of course, that's abjectly false. Mitch McConnell is a very big spender, and so are the leaders, the inheritors of the leadership under Paul Ryan, Kevin McCarthy, and the others. And I'll make that really clear. I will tell you who voted for this bill when we return. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
A call to action from American Family Radio.
There's all kinds
lot of difficulty in the world. But as the Word of God says, if your brother's in need and you have it within your ability to respond to their need, how can you claim to have love if you allow them to go without? What greater need is there than the need to live? I know life is rough, but it don't have nothing to do with the baby. Don't kill the baby. Don't wait for preborn campaigns. Don't wait for legislation to be passed in your state legislature. Don't wait till Roe versus Wade is overturned. Respond now. I believe with everything in me that we can end this scourge regardless of what they do in the halls of Congress and the halls of the state legislature. Every single family, every single church, go to the local abortion clinics. Let them know that you have people in your churches, people in your family that are willing to take the babies home. They have families that have been dying to take a child home. Don't kill the babies.
Visit AFR.net.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance each day to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Margaret Everson, Principal Deputy Director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Her agency is dedicated to the management of fish, wildlife, and natural habitats. Genesis 1:21 reminds us that the earth and its creatures are the Lord's creation. So God created the great sea creatures and every living creature that moves, with which the waters swarm according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask you to guide Margaret Everson as she manages our nation's wildlife, fish, and habitats. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
A lesson in patriotism. That story coming up.
True at McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truitt.edu today.
A teenage boy in Pacific, Missouri was caught stealing an American flag the other day. The crime captured on surveillance video at the Beacon Car and Pet Wash. Bill Hoagland posted video of the incident on his Facebook page. Did not take long for folks around town to identify the culprit. But instead of arresting the kid, Mr. Hoagland decided to take matters into his own hands, and he gave the teenager a second chance. Mr. Hoagland invited the young man to fess up and return the flag in person. And he agreed not to press charges so long as the teenager spent the day handing out free American flags to all the customers at the car wash. Mr. Hoagland is a veteran. He tells the local Fox station that he just wanted to make sure that teenage boy learned a life lesson instead of going to jail. Lesson learned. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
We can balance the budget very quickly.
But do you think in 5 years?
I think over a five-year period, and I don't know, maybe I could even surprise you.
We are not paying for the government that we are getting. And unless we're going to continue to steal money from our kids, we have to make a very difficult choice, which is, are we going to raise taxes or are we going to reduce spending?
All right, that was in order. President Donald Trump, when he was running for election, and also Mick Mulvaney, now his Office of Budget and Management director, who was with Chris Wallace on Fox News Sunday yesterday. You know, Mick is famous for being a fiscal hawk. And my understanding is that he was shut out of these negotiations because Steve Mnuchin is more willing to make compromise, which he did, on this budget that we've been talking about. The budget, by the way, just to kind of give you another way of thinking about it. So we will, under this current spending deal, by removing the cap, spend nearly $2 trillion in the next 10 years, more. We're already $22 trillion in debt. And Daniel Horowitz writes, consider that revenue is now $1.5 trillion higher than in 2009 and 2010 during the Great Recession. That was not the great. I don't think that was the Great Recession. I would say the less great recession, less great than the one in the 30s. Yet the emerging deficits will rival those of the Obama stimulus era. So that gives you an idea of how bad this is. And so I wanted to continue. I have a lot to get to today, but this is important because we're midstream on this. So let me tell you how this came down in the House on Thursday. 132 conservatives in the House voted against this budget. 132. 65 Republicans joined Democrats. And guess who those 65 Republicans were who joined Democrats? I'm going to give you some of their names. Ader Holt from Alabama. Kevin Brady from Texas. Brooks from Indiana. John Carter from Texas. Will Hurd from Texas. I can't give you all their names because actually I don't even know some of these names, but Congressman Pence from Indiana, the brother of Mike Pence. Martha Roby, both of the Rogers, one from Alabama, one from Kentucky. Steve Scalise, Liz Cheney, Doug Collins, who's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, who's done a really good job, I think, chairing that during these hearings. But I'll tell you in a second the thing that draws them together. Rodney Davis from Illinois, Mike McCall, Texas, Kevin McCarthy from California, Peter King, Adam Kinzinger, Bratt's district was Stefanik, Congressman Stefanik, Fred Upton, and Greg Walden. And, of course, that's not a complete list. There were 75 Republicans who voted with the Democrats. There were 16 Democrats who voted against it. I think they're probably in tough districts. It's the 75 Republicans that I just want to point out. Their hook, the thing that binds them together, is that they're all part of that leadership cabal. And for better or for worse, and I'd say for worse. And so they all voted lockstep. But the thing that encourages me is the 132 Republicans voted against their leadership. They voted against Kevin McCarthy and Steve Scalise. And against Liz Cheney, who's part of the leadership now, too. So that's encouraging to me, because what we'd like to do, I personally would like to see them get better leadership. You know how I push for Jim Jordan for good reason. And so... that's the one bright spot in that. And I wanted to play for you an interesting moment that happened in Congress last week that you may not have heard about. Chip Roy, of course, is the chief of staff for Ted Cruz, and now he serves in Congress. And Chip was in a committee meeting, and there, I think it was Elijah Cummings who's the chair, I believe. We'll see in a second. And so they are subpoenaing, you know, everybody, that anything that moves that's connected to Donald Trump. And this particular exchange is about the subpoena of Ivanka Trump's information. And Chip starts out by saying she is complying. It's what you've asked is overwhelming, and she is complying. And so that's where we pick it up. This is Chip Roy in Congress this past week.
My understanding is she's working to comply with the laws in response to the request from this body. My understanding is she's turning over emails in response to it and making those records public. That's what the laws are saying, to make them part of the Presidential Records Act. This is something that I think is critically important to this whole debate. Why are we doing this? Because they're working with us to comply with the law, to turn over the information, to follow what the chairman was just saying. In the meantime, while we are doing this, while we are sitting here, as I pointed out before, for the hour we're going to be debating this, another $100 million of debt has been racked up. Another how many thousands of people have poured across our border? How much more control have we yielded to cartels who truly control and run our border? That's what we're dealing about. We've got a text. I get information right here from someone on the front lines on the border saying, I will tell you, my station, this is Border Patrol, my station has around 500 total agents, around 70 for the day shift, around 90 for swings, and around 80 for midnight shift. I'm averaging between 9 to 14 on the line for day shift. They've halted the horse patrol detail and made them security at McAllen. They're making our elite and highly trained BORTAC do the same. Detention security. All the agencies that are helping us are doing detention security, hospital watch, sandwich making, handing out hygienic items, and milk and transportation. My Army unit was called up. What are we doing? We're building new detention facilities in the border. They're not patrolling the border. We're not doing anything to stop and deal with the problems that we've got with cartels managing the border. And we're sitting here in a fishing expedition for emails alleging that we're trying to do that in compliance with the law that's being complied with. In what universe is this what we're supposed to be doing for the United States of America, for the people of this country, who are watching their country racking up mountains of debt, $320 billion over existing spending levels, which would still give us a $1 trillion deficit?
All right, so that's the first part of it. And so you can hear the passion in Chip's voice. You can hear that he's losing his voice. This is what's happening to the good men in Congress. And I don't know. There are some women, I think, that are good, that are brand new, whose names are not familiar to me yet. But for the most part, it's guys. It's not girls. I haven't seen many champions in Congress. If I saw them, I'd tell you. I thought maybe Liz Cheney would be one. She is on defense, she is. But on other things, not so much. So here's Chip fighting this battle, this lonely battle. I want you to hear the rest of it because it's important. He is really fighting on behalf of the American people. Let's listen.
Well done, Congress. Well done. And you're going to have that kind of level of spending while we've got wide open borders. What are we doing for the people of the United States? I'm going to be told, oh, we're protecting the law. The law is being complied with. When instead what it is a fishing expedition for political purposes, which we saw on high display yesterday in the room next door, where we got nothing other than dawdling responses about an incompetent effort. And here we sit, mounting up debt for our children and grandchildren. My 9-year-old son is in this room. We all have families. What are we passing down to them? $100 million of debt per hour? It's extraordinary. Wide open borders, destroying communities, endangering lives of Americans in South Texas while I get smirks from my Democratic colleagues, while there are people right now facing attacks from cartels, dealing with it on a daily basis, and we get smirks and we get requests for emails from people in the White House. This is the face of the Democratic Party. This is the face of your Congress today, America.
Good job, Chip. Good job.
Mr. Connolly.
I thank the chair.
Ms. Connolly.
I thank the chair. I have a motion. I do want to just say shame on my colleague from Texas.
No.
To question the motivation of Democrats.
Shame on this body.
Yeah, I know. We've heard from you. It's my time. It's
and
my
you'll continue to hear from me. Wait a minute. In defense of this country.
Mr. Chairman.
Hold up. He has the time.
I have the time.
America deserves the time.
Yeah. America deserves better than what I just heard from, Mr. Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
He's taking his ball and going home. Bye.
Recognized for the time.
Mr. Chairman, I move the previous...
He moves that the previous comments be struck from the record. That's what Jerry Connolly says. That's Congressman Connolly from Virginia, a Democratic congressman, and the chairman of the committee is Elijah Cummings. So you heard it. You heard it. And so Chip is fighting, and you hear the now you can see why that group would bring fried chicken, you know, to a mic and think it's funny because they're like kids. They're like kids, really wicked kids, actually, very spoiled kids. And Chip is right. The country has so many serious problems, and they are, you know, gazing at their navels over subpoenaing people surrounding Donald Trump and the hopes that maybe we'll still find something. And as a matter of fact, after the hearing last week, you might have thought that they would stop. But no, not really. Gerald Nadler's not stopping. He said he's moving toward impeachment. Now he wants to get Don McGahn, the president's former attorney, White House attorney, to come and testify. And he hopes to do that very soon. They just want to keep dragging this out. Of course, Gerald Nadler, as I understand it, has a very tough, he's got a challenge from the left in his district. And of course, he's from New York. And so it'll be someone, he's from New York, New York. Sorry, I laughed at the way I said that. Anyway, he's from a district that, might have an AOC challenging him. And I don't know the person's name, but I know it's from the left. So he's trying to move to the left, but that doesn't matter. The reasons, the point is the Congress is just populated by these feckless people on both sides for very, very different reasons. Mostly it boils down to self-interest. And so that's why I think the greatest thing that we, the greatest challenge in this next election is what's always been a challenge, but it just seems more and more important each year, and that is to make sure we get the right people in Congress and in the Senate and stop putting up with the ne'er-do-wells, the selfish, self-interested men that are and women who are sending us down this trail of destruction. And we can just look at the border to make that point. All right, let me just keep moving here because so in the aftermath of this hearing, this is what Jerry Nadler said. We are continuing an investigation of the president's malfeasances. He, Director Mueller, told us that Donald Trump obstructed justice. Well, the truth is it's not true. Mueller said, did not say that Trump obstructed justice. In fact, he said the opposite. Doug Collins asked him, at any time during the investigation, was your investigation curtailed or stopped or hindered? Robert Mueller, no. And then it goes, I mean, he just went, I'm not even going to spend my time. You've heard the lies, you get it. And so, but they're continuing. And also now they're asking for a judge to hand out now the secret grand jury evidence that the Mueller investigation gathered. And that means, you know, all the people that were talked to that are completely innocent, who might have told them something that it would be like, it would be like your sister told your mother something with the promise and understanding of confidentiality, something hurtful maybe to you, but something that she felt she should tell your mother. And then the grand jury, that would be like grand jury evidence. And then now they want all of that to be made public. All those secret things, all the things that people said, people whose names you don't know, whose identity has been shielded, who may or may not have helped with the investigation. And by law, that cannot be released. But they don't care about that. They do not care about that. So they're trying to get a judge to release all that secret grand jury evidence. And so that'll be the next thing. And then we find out that the Washington Post conducted a fact check on the hearing. But the problem is they only fact checked the Republicans. They did not fact check anything that the Democrats said. They claimed, this is what the article was titled, Fact-Checking Lawmakers' Claims During the Mueller Hearings, except they only fact-checked Republicans. John Ratcliffe, Doug Collins, Mike Johnson, Louis Gohmert, Greg Stube, and Representative Tom McClintock. So, Ted Lieu, I'll just give you one example. Congressman Ted Lieu, who was really, really kind of mean liar from California. You've seen him before. He was the one who took on Candace Owens. Remember that? He basically accused her of being a racist. Anyway, Ted is not constrained by truth. And it's pretty obvious. He made this statement that they did not indict the president because of the Office of Legal Counsel opinion stating that a sitting president cannot be indicted. Now, when Ted Lieu first stated that, Mueller agreed with him, and then he opened the second hearing by saying, I need to correct something. We did not indict the president because of that OLC ruling. Sorry. too many letters. The OLC, that's the Office of Legal Counsel. We did not do that. And so, but they didn't fact check that, didn't bother to fact check that part. Also, some follow up on the hearings. Some of it I really want to share with you. I'll start, and then when the music starts, I'll come back on the other side and finish it. But Paul Sperry is reporting that Senators Grassley and Johnson, Ron Johnson, today, meaning last week, Friday, sent letters to inspectors general at CIA and NSA requesting they investigate text messages by disgraced FBI agents Peter Strzok and Lisa Page referring to their, quote, sisters, end quote, at intelligence agencies leaking classified info during 2016 and 2017. So who are their sisters at these other intelligence agencies? Senators Grassley and Johnson want to know, and so they subpoenaed to find that out. This is a big one. President Trump has said that he has given Attorney General William Barr the authority to release all the declassified Spygate documents to House Intelligence Vice Chairman Devin Nunes. That's what they've been asking for months. That is a real bombshell, but there are more, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Then Elisha prayed and said, O Lord, please open his eyes that he may see. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. One morning, Elisha's young servant went out first thing and saw the Syrian army surrounding Elisha's hometown. The servant was racked with fear and cried out to Elisha, What will we do? Elisha said, Don't be afraid. There are more with us than are with them. Then Elisha prayed, Lord, open this young man's eyes. The servant then saw the mountain full of horses and chariots of fire. As opposition mounts in our lives, fear not. The Lord who is in us and with us is greater than the hostility present in the world.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Hi, Frank Turek, co-author of I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. Please join me, Stephen Meyer, Gary Habermas, Hugh Ross, Chip Ingram, and many more at the 2019 SES National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 11th and 12th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Whether you're new to apologetics or a seasoned veteran, you will walk away better equipped to engage the culture. Early bird pricing ends August 1st. For tickets and details, visit conference.ses.edu, conference.ses.edu.
On April the 8th, 1966, Time magazine bore a cover with the question, Is God dead? In bold red text on a black background. Years later, many are asking that same question. Find out why as Ravi digs into the philosophy of atheism this week on Let My People Think.
Sundays at 7 p.m. Central.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. One of the lies our culture tells is that marriage is fine for people who want that sort of thing, but since it's purely a matter of personal preference, we shouldn't have public policies that encourage marriage. Don't let them lie to you. Research from 90 countries reveals that two-parent families are more important to a nation's well-being than anything, including population size and education. High shares of married two-parent families increase a nation's gross domestic product, household savings, educational attainment, and reduce crime at the same time. True patriots will want to see policies that encourage marriage over cohabitation, discourage sexual experimentation, and protect children from the grisly impact of no-fault divorce. Marriage is good for America, plus it's just plain fun.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Last weekend brought more demonstrations by freedom fighters among the people of Hong Kong, some violently opposed by police. They keep protesting despite evidence that they are on their own in facing the ruthless repression of the Chinese Communist Party. Those of us who take our liberty for granted might find incomprehensible why millions of Hong Kong people have recently joined in this struggle. The answer is simple. This is their last chance for freedom. Much more is on the line, though. Today, Hong Kong is the front line in our era's phase of the war for the free world. If Communist China gets away with enslaving the people there, it will be emboldened to do the same elsewhere. Deterring such a prospect now by bringing to bear our economic leverage on Beijing will be easier than reversing its dire repercussions later. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sadly, I think a lot of members of Congress had a better understanding of what was in the report than he did.
Did Mueller help Republicans today? Right, today was a big moment. A lot of people haven't read the report. They're going to see Mueller.
Well, I think the Republicans or conservatives are crying out now that this was a disaster for the Democrats. It wasn't just Mueller's hesitancy, but in fact, the substance, he wasn't there. And they came prepared to fight. Mm-hmm. I had not expected that. I mean, they were much more coordinated.
Yes.
They presented things, frankly, we haven't talked about much on CNN, aspects of this that are on the right, but we don't, you know, we haven't visited them because we don't put much stock in a lot of what they're arguing.
That was David Gergen of CNN. You know, David's been around for years. I actually think David used to be a lot more centrist than he is now. He certainly, joined the CNN bandwagon of this Russian collusion thing. And it was a very interesting admission from him that the Republicans on that committee, especially the first one, brought up things we haven't talked about here at CNN. We hadn't talked about that stuff. And so, and rightfully so. I mean, no, not rightfully so. And yes, he's right to say that because they haven't. Maybe even some of those anchors were taken back by information that they'd heard for the very first time. And so I just wanted you to see that. I do think that that hearing, at least for the Washington media, those closest to it reporting it, maybe some good was done by that, even to reach reporters who have just blindly accepted the narrative and not really spent any time looking into the other side of the story. By the way, Paul Sperry is asking for Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Lindsey Graham to call Andrew Weissmann and grill him under oath about what we know was his investigation and his team and his report. Andrew Weissmann, of course, is the Hillary Clinton sycophant who cried at her loss at the party and who's donated lots of money to her, as have, the other people on Mueller's team that he appointed. They all were Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama supporters, and they all gave, I think collectively, like $60,000 to either Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, and yet they were the ones investigating Donald Trump. I want to read to you from, and I think, by the way, Paul Sperry is right, Lindsey Graham should do that. Andrew Weissmann would be a much less sympathetic object of questions if the Republicans on that committee, I guess Ted Cruz would be there, so I'd be all in favor of having him come before that committee. I want to read to you a bit of Kimberly Strassel's article in the Wall Street Journal. Kimberly has such a keen mind, and she really puts things, I think, very well. I want to share with you what she had to say. And by the way, if you want to hear a synopsis of the hearings last week with Mueller, I would invite you to listen to last Thursday's show of this program. I asked my husband, who's a retired Federal Bureau of Investigation special agent, to join me. He served under Bob Mueller, and we kind of analyzed the hearing. And so the hearing was, 7-8 hours, of which we watched almost all of it, probably because you have a life, you didn't get to do that. But if you'd like to hear synopsis and our thoughts about it, I think the Thursday show would be very helpful. Kimberly says this: we've been told that this investigation was solely about Russian electoral interference and obstruction of justice. It's now clear it was equally about protecting the actual miscreants behind the Russia collusion hoax. The most notable aspect of the Mueller report was always what it omitted: the origins of this mess. Christopher Steele's dossier was central to the Federal Bureau of Investigation's probe, the basis of many of the claims of conspiracy between the Trump campaign and Russia. Yet the Mueller authors studiously wrote around the dossier, mentioning it only in perfunctory terms. The report ignored Mr. Steele's paymaster, Fusion GPS, and its own ties to Russians. It also ignored Fusion's paymaster, the Clinton campaign, and the ugly politics behind the dossier hit job. And could I also remind you that when Bob Mueller was asked about the about Fusion GPS, he had no idea who they were. Now, you can say it's because he's, slipping mentally. He was certainly sharp on other things. I would have to say, even if he was not an active participant in his own investigation, he's not even watching the news. Or he's watching CNN. He, like David Gergen, doesn't know about the rest of this stuff. But he should know. He shouldn't have to watch the news. Remember, one of the new congresswomen, whose name escapes me, spent quite a bit of the exchange talking about how the investigation, in fact, the report itself, the Mueller report, cites news articles as their source. They cite, the New York Times, 60 times, the Washington Post, maybe 50 times. I'm guessing the numbers, but something like that. As though news stories would be the source of their investigation when they have all of these investigators, FBI agents. They have the actual data. They have access to the actual people. And they're citing news sources to build their report. It was a very good point that kind of got overlooked. I'm going to go back to Kimberly's article. Mr. Mueller's testimony this week put to rest any doubt that this sheltering was deliberate. In other words, she's saying it was deliberate. In his opening statement, he declared that he would not, quote, address questions about the opening of the FBI's Russia investigation, which occurred months before my appointment, or matters related to the so-called Steele dossier, end quote. The purpose of those omissions was obvious, as those two areas go to the heart of why the nation has been forced to endure years of collusion fantasy. Mr. Mueller claimed he couldn't answer questions about the dossier because it, quote, predated, end quote, his tenure, and is the subject of a Justice Department investigation. These excuses are disingenuous. Nearly everything Mr. Mueller investigated predated his tenure, and there's no reason the Justice Department probe bars Mr. Mueller from providing a straightforward, factual account of his team's handling of the dossier. If anything, Mr. Mueller had an obligation to answer those questions since they go to the central failing of his own probe. And then she goes, he keeps saying in the, she moves down to where he continues to say, this is a direct quote, as I said earlier, with regard to Steele, that is beyond my purview. So that's what he said the whole long day. She says, Republicans asked basic questions about the report's conclusions or analysis, and Mr. Mueller dodged and weaved and refused to avoid answering questions about the FBI's legwork, the dossier's role, and Fusion's involvement. Then again, how could he? The Mueller team, rather than question the FBI's actions, went out of its way to build on them. That's how we ended up with tortured plea agreements for process crimes from figures like former Trump aide George Papadopoulos and former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. I'm going to stop reading it because I want to jump to something that is really important that I think you need to know. It's another detail of this. This article by Kimberly we'll put on our Facebook page because there's a ton more to it. What Mueller Was Trying to Hide by Kimberly Strassel in the Wall Street Journal. I want to move to Papadopoulos. You certainly heard his name, but you may still be confused on what happened to him, and I'm not sure I could explain it. If I had to tell the whole story, I could certainly tell the general part of it. Papadopoulos was a young man with some international experience who was selected to be on the very early Trump. You know, they have all kinds of advisors, and he was selected. I think he was in his 20s, and the first thing you know, he is being approached by. People from all over the world who he would never at that age have been approached by. He was offered $10,000 to come lecture at some event in, I believe, London. He was approached by an Australian diplomat. He was approached by this Joseph Misfood. And what you might not know was he was paid $10,000 in cash during one of these exchanges. And George says that he didn't quite know why he was paid that. He didn't feel comfortable with it. And so he actually sent the money back to his attorney in Greece, because George is originally Greek, and had it put in a safe. Now, here's where we come to today, or at least to Sunday. He was on with Maria Bartiromo on Fox Sunday morning. He told Maria that he's heading back to Greece to retrieve the $10,000 that he suspects was dropped in his lap as part of an entrapment scheme by the CIA or the FBI. And federal investigators want to see the marked bills, which he said are now stored in a safe. Now, remember, I'm going to skip ahead for a second. Remember when this is when we first started hearing about the so-called Russian collusion. George Papadopoulos flies back home from one of these trips, and he's met at Dulles Airport by FBI agents, and he's arrested. And they go through his bags, and they're looking for cash, but there's no cash because George did not keep that money. He sent it to his attorney in Greece because he smelled a rat, and it's been in that box ever since. So let me go ahead and spell this out. Papadopoulos said he's very happy to see Devin Nunes grill former special counsel Mueller about the summer 2017 payment during last week's hearings. And, of course, Mueller said it was outside the scope of his investigation. I was very happy to see that Devin Nunes brought that up. A man named Charles Tawil gave me this money in Israel under very suspicious circumstances. A simple Google search about this individual will reveal he was a CIA or State Department asset in South Africa during the 90s and 2000s. I think around the time Bob Mueller was the director of the FBI. Maria puts it this way because she makes it easy to understand, I hope. She said, George Papadopoulos just told me he's going back to Greece to retrieve the $10,000 that was dropped in his lap as part of the FBI's entrapment. It's in a safe in Greece. It's marked bills, and the Intel committees want to see it. So then George goes on to say, I have a theory about what this was all about. The money, I gave it to my attorney in Greece because I felt it was given to me under very suspicious circumstances. And upon coming back to the U.S., I had about 7 or 8 FBI agents rummaging through my luggage looking for money. According to Papadopoulos, the whole setup, by the FBI likely, or even the special counsel's office, was intended to bring the Foreign Agents Registration Act violation against me. The FARA statute, by the way, played a key role in the prosecutions of former Trump aides Michael Flynn and Paul Manafort. They kind of were boring. They either charged people with a line to the FBI or this FARA statute, which, by the way, has never been enforced. But suddenly they decided they had a unique interpretation of the statute, and that's how they brought down the house on Paul Manafort and also on Michael Flynn. I actually want Congress, Bill Barr, DOJ Inspector Michael Horowitz, and U.S. Attorney John Huber to review the bills because I still have the bills. I think they're marked. These bills that are still in Athens right now must be examined by the investigators because I think they are marked and they're going to go all the way back to DOJ under the previous FBI under James Comey and even the Mueller team. If the Mueller team is going around entrapping campaign associates and Trump associates the way they did me, I'm sure it wasn't just me they did it to. It's going to open up a massive can of worms. This article is a Fox News article, and so there are still some really great writers and investigators at Fox. So I want to make sure I tell you accurately, but I don't think everything at Fox is trustworthy now. So you have to make sure, you know, just like Shepard Smith is not the guy you want to hear the news from. Some of them are not trustworthy. Some of the writers aren't either. And so Papadopoulos pleaded guilty in 2017 to lying to federal investigators, and Mueller recommended he serve prison time in the filing. He ended up spending 12 days in prison and paid $9,500 in the fine. So he also said one last thing on this. About the moment I joined the Trump campaign, I'm being invited by the former foreign minister of Italy to meet Joseph Misfud. After I was introduced to this foreign minister by a company I used to work for, which is connected to MI6, that's the British Intelligence Service. So clearly there was some sort of global or at least European radar on me while I was living in London and as soon as I was joining the Trump campaign, which not even the media knew at the time. So I'm being introduced now to Joseph Misfud in Rome at a school that trains the CIA and the FBI. So he just says there's a lot that's rotten in Denmark. That article is going to be on our Facebook page too. Papadopoulos to head to Greece to retrieve $10,000 payment. I just think that's fascinating. And then a couple of other things here. This is from the national security writer who goes by Sundance. Again, I don't know who it is, but people that I trust cite him. So here we go. In our opinion, the content of the diary by former FBI Director James Comey, as outlined in what has been formally called the Comey memos, is devastating to the U.S. Department of Justice and FBI. How do we know? Because the FBI is fighting like blank to keep even descriptions of the memo's content from becoming public. So CNN is trying to get this, trying to get these Comey memos, and he says, I've never been on the side of CNN, but I am now, because the Comey memos are part of the real heart of this story. You know, James Comey was writing copious notes every time he met with the president, and we think he probably kept copious notes of a number of other things, and the FBI won't release those. Well, why not? You know, they certainly released, you know, private recordings of the National Security Advisor, Michael Flynn. They were happy to make all that public and try to make public any kind of personal information on anybody connected to Donald Trump, but not so much themselves. And so this is, you know, I just told you, the president has asked for full release of everything related to this investigation. So I think there's a lot more that we don't know. And we're going to be on it, you can bet. All right, I didn't talk about Baltimore, but maybe tomorrow. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.